This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Oh, it's my favorite time of the year when the weather outside is as random as a roulette ball drop. And it's Friday, which means we're back with a roundup of the news. Today on CityCast Las Vegas, I'm here with my co-host Sarah Lohman and the comedian-magician Matt Donnelly from the amazing podcast Matt and Mattingly's Ice Cream Social. And we're going to be talking about that canine stabbing, pushback from street vendor regulations, and the top three places where Nevadans are moving to. You might be surprised. I was. It's Friday, April 5th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Before we get started, quick reminder, we're giving away two pairs of tickets to some wonderful Home and History Tour events. These are the events that happen every year from the Nevada Preservation Foundation, where volunteers take you through historic homes, areas, and give you all the interesting facts. But the giveaway is just for our members of CityCast Las Vegas, so make sure to join the CityCast Las Vegas membership program at lasvegas.citycast.fm by tonight. We'll have those details in the show notes. All right. Welcome to the show, Matt and Sarah. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Oh, good to see you both.
Thank you.
And let's jump into the news because there was so much this week. We had a hard time picking which ones we wanted to talk about. But here's a story that we're seeing more frequently. A person with a knife is confronted by the police and the police deploy a canine. And when it goes wrong, dog people take note. So, Sarah, what's the latest episode?
Yeah, let's get strap in for a bummer of a story, everybody. So, as most of you probably heard by now, a canine officer was stabbed. That is a dog. His name is Enzo. He's doing fine, by the way. He went into the animal hospital and was actually released on Wednesday, and he's taken some time off work, certainly. But the story is basically there's a man named Thurman Lowe. He called the LVMPD to say he was stabbing himself and that he would stab police if they showed up. So already a pretty effed situation. The police did show up, and after a standoff during which Lowe set fire to his apartment, he came down the stairs with a knife saying, "I'm coming to get you," which is fucking creepy, but also this person is clearly having a mental breakdown. So Enzo the dog was deployed to intercept, and when he latched on to Lowe, Lowe stabbed him. So at this point, though, Lowe was knocked over and taken into custody, and he went to UMC. He's stable, but he is charged with arson, assault of a protected person, resisting arrest, and attacking an animal. And like I said, Enzo is doing well. So that's the gist.
Yeah, they had to airlift the dog out there to a special vet, I guess, to make sure that he was going to be all right. But yeah, thankfully the dog is okay. But it looks like a lot of public comment is maybe a little split. A lot of people are like, F that guy for stabbing a dog. He should go away forever. And other people are like, well, what do you expect? You're using a dog as a weapon. And I guess the question I want to ask is, how fair is it that he was charged for stabbing a dog that ran and bit him? I mean, when does it become some degree of self-defense?
I also want to chime in here and say, you guys brought me on here as a comedian, and you started off with this story. And so,
yeah, that's right, Matt.
I'm not
gauntlet,
loving it either.
Gauntlet down.
I was like, oh, God, I got the dog stabbing story. Jesus.
I quit is what I'm saying. What
all right. Well, we weren't paying
you,
so. Okay, so what is the deal here? It's a tough situation. Like most of these stories that we get into that gets a big reaction, I think that it comes down to the fact that this man is having a mental health crisis, that he, you know, he both called the police and said, "I'm stabbing myself, help, but don't come, I'll stab you too."
And he emerged with like self-inflicted stab wounds.
Yeah.
And he tried to set fire to his own place. So, yeah, so not the best sitch.
Definitely not F this guy. Like, I would rather Enzo than himself or a police officer. And I'm also glad that Lo didn't get shot, because as we know, that's often the end of a lot of these scenarios where someone calls in a mental health crisis and they may be holding a weapon and they end up getting killed on scene. So I'm much happier that, like, everybody's alive, that Enzo was sent in, and that, like, everybody's getting some help right now. But the litany of charges actually against Lo, I don't know, controversial take, feels like a little unfair for someone who clearly needs help.
What do you think, Matt?
I think this is where we need to start talking about police cats, right?
Mm-hmm. There you
would
go.
Not be mm-hmm. able to stab a cat. Cats are too nimble, too agile.
Mm-hmm. And they're wily.
And notice I'm using plural. Sure, you can maybe get one cat. But if you deploy numerous cats, you would not be able to. And in fact, we might have been able to stop this guy if we just made him watch the movie Cats. If we made him watch the movie Cats, he'd probably...
Well, if he was already agitated,
yeah, that's
Matt,
what caused his mental breakdown.
That's a good
Thank
point.
You.
I rescind my last comment. It's a good
but
point.
But I do envision now this, like, herd of trained kitty cats.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds
really disorienting
right?
him to the point where they can, like, overcome him without the violence.
Cats are shockingly loyal. Have you seen that video of the cat going after a grizzly bear? And also the cat that saved that child from a dog, actually? Like, cats will get at it if they've got the motivation.
Yeah.
Sure. And not to trivialize it, although we are having a little bit of fun, but, I mean, this is the situation that keeps coming up over and over where, you know, a single person with a knife is surrounded by what's usually a lot of police officers who are heavily armed and heavily protected with Kevlar and the rest. Let's just go to the heart of this. In this age of tech and tactics, should we be using dogs as weapons? And isn't this an inevitability that this will happen?
This gets really tough because, you know, you bring that up, and the truth of the matter is if that dog's not involved, this probably ends with another, you know, police shooting or something along those lines, right?
Mm.
So as horrible as it is, this is probably the best case scenario that came out of what was going to be a terrible situation no matter what.
I actually didn't even realize that we use police dogs in this way. Like, there's my ignorance. I was genuinely shocked, probably because it's more often that you hear about someone getting gunned down as opposed to this situation. You know, I'm really glad this dog is okay. It is unfortunate, but, like, damn, Enzo, like, he really did his job, and everyone came out of there, maybe not in one piece, but everyone came out of there alive. Like, I'm truly impressed. Maybe there are better technological alternatives. Maybe those tiny robots that deliver stuff on the streets of LA and really freak me out when I turn a corner and one is just sitting there with its beady eyes. Does anybody know what I'm talking about in this room?
Yes.
They're coming. Maybe one of those could do it but I don't know. Like, there is...
By the time your robot overlords take over, maybe we don't care about the scenario anymore.
We won't
anymore.
Have to worry about it anymore. But there's obviously intelligence to the dog, right?
Right.
Well, yeah, but they're trained to do a thing, which is bite someone. And I would imagine someone who's unstable, their immediate reaction is going to be stabby, stabby.
Defend
if they're
themselves.
Holding. If they're holding a knife.
And to be fair, he's trained to latch, not to bite. So he's not going to continue to attack. He's going to grab and basically try to distract someone, which then, like, basically police came in with, like, a ballistic shield. Is that what I'm thinking? Like a riot shield, and push the guy to the ground. That's how they were able to bring him in.
Well, I saw the video, and the dog, once he started stabbing the dog, they recalled the dog. And so there was this gap when the dog was off of the individual, according to the video that I saw. I mean, Matt, do you remember those old-timey cartoons where they would, like, just shoot nets at people and they would, like, Scooby-Doo them and they wouldn't be able to move?
I was trying so hard not to say the word nets, but I think about this every time I read about these scenarios. I feel like there are so many of these terrible police interactions that would be better if nets were involved. And I know, but it's a bad look, right? It looks terrible to use nets on people, but I feel like...
Oh, like they're actual animals, sure. No, I was thinking we were using the nets on the cops.
No.
What? Why are you netting cops all of a sudden? No, the suspect.
Oh.
You know, somebody had sent me a video of Japanese officers who were engaging with a person, again, with a knife. And I think if a person is brandishing a gun, we have a different situation.
Sure,
of course.
But the Japanese police use these giant, what look like giant Q-tips, and they're just like pushing the guy from a distance. And then our producer, Sonia Cho Swanson, had a video of what is essentially like a giant futon that wrapped the people up like a burrito.
Did they also shoot with tennis ball guns? I'm just trying to see a game show. How close to American Gladiator do they go?
These all seem fairly effective. Like those tennis ball guns, they leave a bruise, you know?
Well, look, I just want to get, you know, again, a little deeper. The history of using dogs to enforce laws is not particularly bright in the United States. It comes from a very, very dark tradition. And you know, while these dogs are highly, and where these dogs are highly trained, et cetera, I mean, again, you're sending an animal that doesn't have free will at that point, that isn't trained to negotiate or de-escalate, that's trained to latch. And when people are latched, especially if they're in these kind of like, you know, unstable situations, and a dog is clamping down on them and they don't have any guard or protection, there's going to be an immediate reaction. And then again, going back to the start of this conversation, that person now is going to get super duper charged when, you know, the police were called to kind of this crisis situation. Is there an unfairness here?
That does feel like the unfair part. There's a lot of different things going on here. It does feel unfair that Lowe has been charged with so many things. But honestly, the more I think about it, the more I'm getting behind cat officers.
There we go. Back to that. Matt Donnelly, you're here for a reason.
Yeah, because exactly. They would approach with gentleness, but like, yeah, if the perp got aggressive, like they're not going to stand for that.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, the last update here is that the guy is still in the hospital, probably from his own self-inflicted, plus some of the Enzo bites. And then twist, he's wanted for murder in another state. Yeah, so I think whatever happened here is probably the least of his worries right now.
But I'm telling you right now, the audience listening doesn't care about that previous murder. Once you kill a dog, that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
And it is sort of a bummer about human nature, but maybe it's the innocence of animals that we're really sensitive to. When I first look at the story, I'm like, what about the man? Like, why do we villainize people so easily? But I mean, I don't villainize animals. They're animals. They're just doing their thing. Anyway, it does seem like this is in a lot of ways best case scenario. So I'm happy to see that.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, another topic. We have been following the saga of street vendor regulations in the Valley for a while now, but it looks like some new moves have been made. Matt, what's going on?
Well, laws that have been debated for a long time are now set to take effect, and it's being considered controversial. But yeah, the very strict laws involving street vendors where they can't sell any kind of food within 1,000 feet of schools or parks or, you know, or the Strip and downtown Las Vegas, Fremont Street, et cetera. 1,000 feet, obviously a pretty drastic measure.
Yeah.
But the heart of the matter is basically that, like, Las Vegas never wanted to legalize street vendors. And so they kept kind of basically enforce as they wanted kind of scenario. And then the state passed a law that legalized the path to becoming a street vendor. So Las Vegas countered with very strict measures to become a street vendor. Things like getting a license, processing fee, insurance, etc. All the things on top of that. But that's not, it's basically really, it's the 1,000 feet rule that is really going after people.
Although I understand the insurance isn't like light. It's not like car insurance. It might be a little bit more.
Right. Anytime you're dealing with food, you're going to be dealing with a certain amount of regulation and insurance costs that are higher. Everything gets higher once you start selling food in any business.
Yeah, sure. Well, Sarah, as a food historian, do you think, and as a human being, do you think legalizing street vendors should be as restrictive and complicated as Clark County is making it?
No. I got some hot food history takes for you. Strap in.
Nice.
Listen, these laws, in particular the distance laws, actually date back to New York City at the turn of the 20th century. And it was the same argument on the Lower East Side, that there were brick and mortar stores, but then there were push cart or basically street vendors out in front of them, lower overhead, selling things cheaper, and the brick and mortars were saying they're taking away our business. And so in the 20s and 30s, they put in a series of laws where they built market spaces that were then more costly for these street vendors. And also required licensing and reduced the number of licenses available. Look, the end of the story is there is absolutely no evidence that street vendors actually compete with brick and mortar stores, because not only do we tend to go to them for different things, but it actually means that it creates sort of a district, a neighborhood. If someone is stopping at a street vendor, they're actually more likely to step into a brick and mortar store. And the results of the changes in the laws that basically took street vendors off the streets in early 20th century New York is it's one of the major factors that absolutely destroyed the neighborhood. So instead of people walking around browsing, it being a huge shopping destination, people just didn't come to that neighborhood anyway. So right. Like a neighborhood that used to be populated was then relying on commercial businesses. And then when the commercial businesses were killed by restricting street vendors, it killed the whole neighborhood. And I guess my last shout out that I want to make is that people who are in street vending are often new immigrants. It's a really, really common way for people who are new to this country to begin to make a living here. And yes, there's low overhead, but there's also tight margins. So when we start introducing licensing expenses and insurance expenses, yes, we want to protect people, but often what that's effectively doing is pushing immigrants out of this business, largely making it open to white investors. And cities where we see restrictive street vending laws are cities that it basically comes from a place of xenophobia, that it's a fear of like dirty food made by ignorant immigrants, and cities where we see positive street vending regulations often are simply encouraging white people, not a diversity of people, to street vend. Hot takes.
Listen, a way less hot take is simply that I am a father of two kids that play soccer, and I miss the people selling food at the soccer games. That is,
yes.
I liked getting my Eliote at soccer games.
There's community there too, right? You know these vendors and you build a relationship with them. They become a part of your neighborhood, which I think is so important.
Yeah, especially those who are kind of going through the actual neighborhoods themselves, as much as, you know, homeowner associations won't allow that, open neighborhoods do. And I loved your history, Sarah, as I always do. And I just couldn't stop thinking about, you know, the turn of the century in the Lower East Side and people picking up Lucy Pickles from the street cart outside. I love that.
I mean, we see,
because I'm not going into a brick and mortar for a single pickle.
No,
come
but
on.
If you stop in front of the store, then you're like, oh, maybe I should stop in here with my drippy pickle. I mean, I have seen it historically in so many places. It was done in Austin and San Antonio as well, targeting Mexican street vendors, specifically at the turn of the 20th century. Same things, more regulation, commercial kitchen, have to be indoors. It gets too expensive. They disappear. And then now, ironically, like Austin is a big food truck city, but again, it's largely a white population that can invest more money up front.
Sorry, I heard drippy pickle and then I forgot what we were talking about.
Fair. Did I say drippy pickle? Who said drippy pickle?
I did. Oh. I'm sorry. I know you weren't ready for this to get so erotic this morning.
It is worth noting that Reno did pass laws that had a 0 feet restriction law. And so we are seeing a contrast between tactics and seeing how that's going to work up in Reno.
Oh, Reno, so innovative. But on the other hand, you know, these things like licensing and insurance and in training, they exist for a reason. Doesn't the health district and the county and the city have a valid interest in really regulating these street vendors to make sure everything is on the up and up, Matt?
Yeah, but sometimes the reason is just xenophobia. I'm sorry. You bring a food historian in on a street vending topic. I'm amped. I'm worked up. I've got the cold brew in my system. Here we go. A lot of these laws are targeted at people who do not have the language, skills, or money to fight them, right? So an interesting organization to look at is the Street Vendors Project out of New York City. They're basically kind of the union for street vendors, and they do all of the legal battling. They do the advocacy. They work with vendors. A big problem in New York City is there's a limit on the number of licenses, and so they're being sold on the black market at a huge premium. It's just a mess. It's just people trying to make some money and are serving really delicious elote at soccer games. Like, leave them alone.
I'm of two minds on this because I agree about the soccer games and schools thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, and it does feel our Latino community. It does feel like it's basically going right after them when it comes to soccer games.
And, you know, Filipino, East Asian, you know, any of our immigrant communities that might also street vend.
And I, thank you for that correction, by the way. But if I'm down on Fremont Street, right, and basically all the people are pouring out of the bars after last call, and I'm, you know, spending the money to be a, you know, pizza place that's available for those drunk people to come in and buy pizza, and there is just a guy on the corner getting a bunch of people selling hot dogs, it would bother me as a merchant downtown.
Well, we hear that a lot from the merchants, right, is that they put all this money and time into building these spots. They have to follow all the rules. They have these huge fees and insurance, et cetera. And then a guy rolls up with a cart, doesn't have a bathroom or a hand wash for the people who come up. They come into his restaurant or her restaurant to use the facilities, like the bathroom or whatever, and then go right back out and patronize the other person.
This is anecdotal evidence, though. Like, yeah. I mean, honestly, if I'm coming out of a bar on Fremont Street and I am hammered, what I was putting myself in that mindset as you were placing me in that moment, yes. And my first thought was, oh, fuck, I really want a corn dog. So if I'm going to go get a corn dog, I'm not going to go get a slice of pizza. But if my friend is like, you know what, I really have to pee, I'll be like, all right, let's get a pepperoni slice, right? So, like, we're assuming the motivations of people are purely financial, which they are obviously not at 3 a.m. when I'm hammered. That is the last thing on my mind. I've already tipped that bartender $80 by mistake. I am whatever is happening to me is happening. So, like, it's actually more likely that someone's going to buy a hot dog and it's like, shoot, I have to use the bathroom and, like, maybe, like, go inside to buy their soda. It actually tends to increase business, not affect it negatively.
You know, what I think would help this situation, David,
Yeah,
cats. I think if you release cats onto the street, I feel like the cats don't help in this situation. Only the first.
I don't know. Every food cart should have like a food cart cat, like bookstores have bookstore cats.
No, this is what I'm thinking, because if brick and mortars are afraid of people not coming in, just add a cat to the situation.
Oh, yeah,
I will
yeah.
be there. I will be like, do you want to get a hot dog? No, I want to go in the pizza place. They've got it. They've got that pizza cat.
Right.
Like in Japan. They have those cafes where you can pet owls, you know?
Yeah, Japan, yes. I mean, they also have cafes where you can pet cats. It's interesting you went right to the owls.
So, you know, these bands, like Matt, you described, are seemingly everywhere, including sports venues.
Right.
I mean, you can't, and really, they're getting them off the strip. I don't think that they're going to be in the places that we'd expect to see them. What do you think street vendors could bring to the community, to these kind of places, too?
Well, I think the sports stadiums, what they're doing is obviously greedy, but also they're doubting me as an eater. I have the ability to eat both outside and inside the stadium, no problem. So
okay.
They think that I'm going to eat outside, that I won't eat inside. That's a mistake right there.
Valid concern. And also, yeah, a beer is $1 billion inside of the stadium. So, like, they're doing fine. You know, I will say I have an example from a less glamorous location. I feel like I quote this book every other week, but Kim Foster's book, The Meth Lunches. In her concluding chapter, she talks about, great book. There's a study that was done in Stockton where basically a taco truck popped up next to a bus stop. And formerly the bus stop was quite dangerous and people were afraid to wait there for the bus, especially overnight. But when the taco truck popped up, not only were the taco vendors there, but like then there were a line of people waiting for tacos. And so it became where it was formerly like a very dark and dangerous place, like very bright and celebratory and full of people. And then these were also people from the community. So people started meeting each other and making connections. Mm. It's quite a remarkable story. And I do think that street vending has that power to bring a community together and make it safer.
I mean, even just from a standpoint of gathering, it makes people safer. Like
yes.
This town. loves to plow over people and kill them. We will hit people with a car, no problem. Las Vegas keeps breaking the record year after year of how many pedestrians we hit with cars. And so having more place where we're gathered and making more of a pronouncement of where we are is an increase in safety.
And like those street side vendors that are popping up kind of LA style, like literally bringing tables and lights and a whole sort of outdoor restaurant in front of your favorite gas station. Like, that's a scene. That's a good time.
Well, I look forward to if these regulations go through, Elote Speakeasies, the next new hot topic we'll talk about on CityCast Las Vegas. All right, let's move on to our last story. An interesting report came out tracing patterns of migration within the United States. Of course, Nevada has long time been a popular destination for new residents, and Las Vegas in particular has been among the fastest growing communities for a long, long time because of all of our offerings, the sweet weather when it's not windy, friendly people, opportunity to make money in intriguing professions, amazing food, Paygao poker and excellent K-12 education. CityCast Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. But surprise, surprise. People leave here, too, and this report has identified where people are going based on census data, though, I don't know, maybe they're tracking folks through their pandemic vaccines. Either way...
That's what they put in the vaccines, the tracker.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so they had to know where you're going.
Yeah.
So they know where people are moving out of Las Vegas.
That's it.
Yes. And how fast.
It was big census was behind the vaccine push.
Just so they could do this damn report so we could talk about it. But we do have the top three locations where our residents are now relocating. And those places are Texas, Arizona, and surprise, surprise. Number one, California. Mm.
Take that, California. You think you can come here? We're coming there.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if there's so much like anger. Those Nevadans are really screwing up our liberal policies.
No.
Well, I bet a bunch of Nevadans are moving there going like, wait, I thought I was a Democrat.
Oh, my God.
Right? Oh, my God. Well, what do you think that these folks who are leaving Nevada are going to bring to their new homes that's very Las Vegas?
I was going to say, before you said very Las Vegas, I was going to say unproduced screenplays.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Add them on to the slush.
Yeah.
Maybe if we're going to LA, probably like a chiller attitude about food. Like I cannot with the raw milk drinking Erewhon smoothie, bee pollen, the mushroom supplementing, like biohacking. Like, oh my God, just be a little bit fat. For God's sakes. I think
so
that's
they're bringing obesity
bring.
With them.
Just
is that
a
what
touch.
You're saying?
Well, I was just saying they probably want to spend more nighttime business hours. That'll probably be the first demand.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Whenever I travel to California or a lot of places from here, I'm like, oh, I forgot. I live in places where things close, right?
Yeah. Like visiting family in Boston, shit closes at 10 p.m. I'm like, nobody wants a beer after 10 p.m.?
Exactly.
What kind of life am I living?
It's like, last call, I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. Any kind of liquor law, you're going to be like, wait, what? I can't buy this at 7-Eleven?
It's true. Yeah. I mean, but maybe they still have 24-hour Walmarts over there. We'll have to go see.
Yeah.
You think that some shrimp cocktail might get smuggled? We talked about that on the pod recently.
That sounds like a violation of health district orders.
You might get stopped
shrimp.
At the border. Like, that's the one thing that they will actually check for at
with
that
your
checkpoint.
Pocket full of fermented seafood? Yeah.
What if it's all just clowns, jugglers, and people just, you know, acrobats? What if that's the only people moving from Nevada to California?
And the stats just Nipton. It's only just Nipton. Like all those thousands and thousands of people are just descending upon Nipton, California from Nevada.
Dipping a toe into California.
The great circus outflux. It's going to be a real damper on our native industries here.
All right. Well, it's we're going off the rails, folks. We got California. We got Texas. We got Arizona. These are our three most popular expat locales. For a slightly more PG version, y'all, of the famous F, marry, kill game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go with wine, dine, or ditch. Wine means you take them out for a good time. Dine is a long-term commitment. And ditch is you getting ghosted. Oof. So, Sarah Lohman.
Oh, God.
California, Texas, Arizona. Wine,
I mean,
dine, ditch.
Ditch is obvious. Texas.
Oof.
No, sure. Austin is like, we're Austin. We have bats. No, you know what? You don't have abortions. I'm not spending any amount of time with Texas because if Texas knocks me up, I'm absolutely literally screwed. So goodbye, Texas. Sorry.
All right.
Probably wine, California, because again, they're a little flaky, so you don't want to like depend on them, but you know they're up for a good time, unless they're watching their carbs as per usual. So like, yeah, I'm sure it'll be a fun fling. So I guess Arizona is dine. We're a little more chill. They might be a little too more into crystals than I'm into, but
so you're dining Arizona, and I hope that you enjoy the chimichangas, which are fantastic Arizona dish.
The state of Arizona seems down for a commitment, so we're going for it.
Matt, wine, dine, ditch.
I'm going to let's see. I'm going to wine California because I wine California all the time as it is. I go out there all the time to do shows, and I scurry back to my comfortable home here in Las Vegas with
a little
my
smoochy with Cal.
Low state taxes. Let's see. I have to ditch Arizona only because it's the only place that gets hotter than where we are now. It's the only place where, like, when we say it's too hot, people in Arizona are like, whatever, dude.
So what are you left with? You're married to, or you're dining with Texas.
Oh, weird. I didn't mean to box myself into that corner.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, shoot, because I do like equal rights, and I am wary of states that think they can go it alone when it comes to electricity. So
you just said I do though,
but I do. I think, you know, but I go out to Austin all the time, and Austin is that it is the beacon that it claims to be. I do
got
love
those
it.
Bats.
I do love it. I mean, out there. In Austin.
So you're just gonna die in Austin, and that's fine. You put a bubble. Yeah.
Texas
put a bubble
is gonna
on it.
Ditch yeah, yeah. You, Matt. You can't like you think you're getting involved in a committed relationship, and then it's like, oh, we can secede. Yeah. It says so in our state constitution. It secedes right out of the union, and then where are you?
Hmm? All right, I'm gonna bounce through this really fast. Yeah. I went to college in Arizona, and I'm going to just tell you this right now. Hmm. In a lot of ways, as much as I love parts of Arizona, Arizona is very much like Florida with cactus. It's a whack job place in a lot of that state. Mm-hmm. So I'll go wine it. There's really good restaurants, and there's Sedona, and there's great hiking, et cetera, et cetera. I am going to ditch California.
Whoa.
And I'll tell you why, because they're not going to be around much longer anyway. They're going to come off of the continent because of climate change, and we're going to be
away.
California, and it would be very incestual. So ditching mm-hmm. California, and I guess that leaves me to dine Texas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm with you. You and me, Matt, we're gonna go out on couples dates. Fantastic.
Oh, God. All right. I think that's a throuple, y'all. Sorry. If there's just two of you and one Texas, that's a polycule. Sure.
I can't speak for Matt, but I'm in.
Me, David, and a cat. Throuple.
in Texas. And speaking of cats, oh my God, that's all we're doing is speaking of cats. Sarah,
oh
you have
gosh.
An update
yes,
for us
I
on
do.
Smokey, the 29-pound cat at the Animal Foundation.
I'm
what happened?
So glad you reminded me. Smokey's doing great. He is now in foster care, which is a great place for cats. They get relaxed. And if you want to make an appointment to meet Smokey, to perhaps make him your full-time boy, you should reach out to the Animal Foundation with his name and his ID, which will be on the post, but also they'll help you along with that too. So go see Smokey in his beautiful new foster home.
Nice. And Matt, before we close out, I want you to tell us a little bit about something you got coming up. It's called Scoop-Aberration 2024.
Yes.
Yeah.
That
comes right off the tongue.
we awkwardly name each one of our Scoop Fests. We've had Scooptopia. We've had the Scoopocalypse.
I like that one.
So this is the Scoopapalooza.
There's
still more to come. There's still more to come.
Great.
Yeah, Matt and Manley's Ice Cream Social. Our listeners are called Scoops. Every year and a half, we do something called Scoop Fest. We gather everybody over at the Orleans. We have trivia battles between podcasts. We also do a live recording of our own podcast. Penn Sunday School with Penn Jillette also does a live podcast there. We also host different shows. So we do different variety shows. All of our friends from town come over.
Yeah.
And we have so many entertainer friends that we put on a crazy variety show. Plus, I was part of a thing called the Fooler's Tour, which is a magician's tour early in the fall. And we were doing a Fooler's reunion at this one in particular. So we're reuniting the four magicians and doing a show there as well. It's a really good time. It's
really raucous too. I mean, your crowd gets into it and it's usually a packed show. I've seen videos.
Yes.
It looks amazing and totally fun and funny.
Yeah. I don't want to intimidate you, Matt, but the last time David and I went to trivia, we tied for a third. So look out.
Yikes.
We did.
Yikes.
It was a 6-way tie too. So yeah, wow. We're there. Hey, Matt, where can people go get tickets to Scoop Fest 2024?
Why, they can go to scoopfest.com, David. We made it that easy for them. Scoopfest.com. You can see all the pass options for you.
All right. Hey, Matt and Sarah, this is a whole new adventure for me, and I loved every single second of it. Thank you so much for being here on City Cats Las Vegas.
My pleasure, David.
City Cats Las Vegas.
City Cats Las Vegas.
And that's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our executive producer is Sonia Cho Swanson. Our producer is Layla Mohammed. Our newsletter editor is Rob Cashorese. And our hosts are Sarah Lohman and me, David Fickler. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and All the Kimonos. We record the show on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed this show, hey, you could go tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, name your cat CityCast, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Till then, stay lucky.
Usually this street vending food is actually quite safe and good. And honestly, if as mentioned before, I get diarrhea every time I go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. So
never get tired of hearing that fact.
Who's the real villain?